Is your diet more chaotic and unorganized than a McDonald's restaurant ball pit during a damn child's birthday party? Is your workout schedule more dysfunctional than a high school relationship? Are you sitting behind a desk right now, with your eyes taped open on your seventh cup of Turkish espresso, just to get through the rest of the damn day? Whew! Well, let's get you figured out. And hell, if you're already figured out, let's get me figured out. Blessing us today with her presence is Miss Carly Fleischer. Appreciate you coming on the podcast and spending some time with us, Carly.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me here. I'm excited to jump in.
Cool. Yeah, so you're the owner and head coach of Moxie Barbell. But
that
you
is
weren't
correct.
Always, right?
Definitely not, no.
All right, so I think a good place for us to start is, you know, the origin story. So why don't you start off with telling us what Moxie Barbell is, and then we'll get into your origin story, how it all became to be.
Yeah, for sure. So like you alluded to, I am the owner and head coach of Moxie Barbell, which is my strength, nutrition, and health behavior change coaching company. So I work with clients in an online capacity to really help them learn how to incorporate fitness into their lives in a way that is sustainable. So I very much consider myself to be a holistic health coach, working with clients not just in the gym and in the kitchen, but thinking about all of the myriad lifestyle factors that contribute ultimately to how they show up there. So I really work with habits and overall lifestyle adjustments that are super sustainable, because I really believe that if you want to live a healthy lifestyle and whatever goal you have in mind, it's not just about that end goal. It's about the process you take to get there. So in short, I help people build that sustainable process that gets them to the end goal, but ultimately helping them build long-term a life that they love and that's healthy and aligns with their goals.
Right. And every person has their own schedule and own agenda. So it seems like what you're doing is very tailorized to the individual. Like, it has to be.
Yeah, it's completely individualized. I mean, there's anybody that tells you that there's one right way to do anything in the fitness realm, like run in the opposite direction, because yeah, like every single person's life looks so, so different. So there's a million different strategies that we can use. It's really figuring out what works for your life specifically, for your work schedule, for your family schedule, for your preferences, yeah, for your budget, for all of the different things. So yeah, I really work very, very individually, and I do a really solid intake with each of my clients to like understand all of the holistic factors about their life. So it's super fun. I dig it.
Great. Okay. Yeah. So we'll come back to that because there's a lot to touch on there, but, but I just want to know the origin story of you. Like, how did it become? How did you even get involved in this?
Yeah, I'll try to give you the short version because it definitely was not short. This was not plan A or plan B or plan C or like anywhere in the alphabet. So, So I graduated from college. I double majored in economics and psychology. So, like, already not the fitness path.
I see.
Background on me, I'm super type A, like overachiever, straight A student. That's been like my MO my entire life. And I very much had the kind of image that everybody had shared with me that, like, you get good grades, you go to a good school, you get good internships, good job, you make a bunch of money, and then you're happy. And so that was the path that I followed of doing the things that other people said I should be doing. And I did all of that. I went to the fancy school. I got straight A's. I ended up in a great job after graduation. So I actually started my career in financial consulting, thinking like, hell yeah, like that's the status job that I was after. That's going to be the climb the corporate ladder there. And I got there and I was so, so miserable. And so I lasted at that job for about 6 months. And that's what began the really tumultuous career transition. The important thing to like know backstory behind that is fitness was like the one thing that was keeping me sane throughout that. So I was an athlete my whole life, competitive gymnast, soccer, tennis, softball, all of the things.
Hell yeah.
I stopped doing competitive sports in high school.
I'll kill you.
Yeah. And then I really just like, I never had to be in the gym because I was always on a team sport. So I really lost the parts of fitness that were like fun to me. And then went to college, gained the freshman, whatever it was. And it wasn't until like my senior year. Yeah. It wasn't until my senior year that I like fell into fitness and then eventually fell into powerlifting. Cause I got way down the strength rabbit hole, like started learning about all of it, but still just like very much a hobby. So I then started this super tumultuous career journey. I had subsequently five or six jobs in a 5-year span, trying to find like something that fit, and just kind of going from sort of half-assed change to half-assed change because I am super, super risk averse. And it was on like job 5 or 6 that I was like, I simply can't do this anymore. I cannot be at another company for 6 months to a year. And so I took the plunge. I got myself certified and I was like, I'm going to coach people online. How hard can that be? And I'm glad that I was naive at the beginning because much harder than I thought. But that is the high level of the story, which always ends up not actually being the short version.
So what was it about corporations that killed you, that like drained your life? Because I on this podcast, I talk about it all the time. I it sucks the life out of me. I left. I work for just for an individual personnel. So it's just me and one other guy.
Yeah.
In sales, but it's not a corporation. But I just felt like a zombie and a robot. I mean, there's good benefits. There's good like insurance plans, but I mean, is that what you want to work for? It didn't feel fulfilling.
No, it definitely wasn't. I'm totally in line with you on that. And again, not something that I knew about. So like I worked financial consulting for Ernst & Young. So like very big corporation. And I went into that again with this predisposition that like, you should want this job. This is the highest status job. This is the best paying job you can get right now. All of this prestige, like this is what's going to let you have success, and success is supposed to lead to happiness. But yeah, when I got there, I mean, number one, I just simply could not have cared less about what I was working on. I was doing anti-money laundering and like regulatory compliance for like a large bank, which is as much of a snooze fest as it sounds like. Yep. So it was just like waking up every single day, dreading it, like anxiety every single day. And I didn't feel very good at what I was doing. And I felt like such an imposter. But then because I didn't like it, I had no drive or motivation to actually try to get better at it. So it was just that. And I also learned through about 5 or 6 jobs, it turns out I'm not great at working for other people. I just don't seem to like... The thing about corporations is all about optics. It's all about how it looks for everybody else, not about what you're actually doing. And that is a game. Yeah, that is a game I just can't play. And it was like, I went from a big company to a startup, to a smaller company, to a slightly more established startup, to a different field. And I was like, it'll be better. It'll be better. It is the same BS optics at every single company. And I cannot get behind that.
Did you know this about yourself right away, or did this take some time to understand who you were?
I definitely didn't know it right away. I mean, my whole life in school, I was so like myopically focused on what the next step was, because that's the thing in school, right? Is it's like, sure, you're super stressed out right now. Even when I think about college, like, did I love my econ classes? No, I didn't love them, but I was like, it's fine. You're not supposed to love them right now. This is just the next step. This is the means to that like shiny job. So it didn't ever occur to me until I got to that end job. I got to my first job. It wasn't an internship. And I was like, oh, this is my life now. Like, there's no end of the semester. There's no change. It's like, this is just what you do. You wake up every day and you work in regulatory compliance. And so,
oh my God.
Yeah, it was just the worst. It was such a terrible realization. Cause again, I felt like I had like spent my entire life working my ass off to get to this point that was supposed to be like the golden ticket. And it was the opposite of that. But even then, I wouldn't say that I knew necessarily that like I wasn't cut out to work for anybody, or that I wasn't cut out to work in a corporation. And partly just because I didn't want to admit that to myself, because I'm super risk averse, and that meant making a much bigger change. And I mean, I was 22, 23 at the time, and I legitimately thought it was too late for me to start a different career. Like, I was too old for it. Which, again, looking back at it now, hilarious, but it felt so, so freaking real when it was happening. Right. So I don't think I let it myself really process that. And then by job like 3 or 4, I think I really started to get the picture that I was going to have to make a bigger change, that there probably wasn't going to be a company that was the right fit for me. But again, just really risk averse and kind of kicked that down the road for as long as I could, because It's really scary starting your own business and not having a consistent paycheck and health insurance and benefits and all that stuff. It's really scary.
Well, it's kind of a blessing in disguise. Well, now that you look back at it, it is. But sometimes you need something to be so miserable for you to get out of something. Because if it's just miserable enough, like, people will adapt to it and just kind of coast through it if it's not chaotic and like ultra miserable. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, 100%.
Yeah. So it was so bad. You're like, oh, this ain't it. I'm not doing this shit. I'm not doing this.
I'm also like, I have a lot of anxiety just like as a human being. So like, it would just ramp up my anxiety when I don't like what I'm doing. And then I get stressed out about it and all of that. And I also tend to err on the more impulsive side. So once I have it in my head that like, I don't like something or I don't want to do something, there's no world in which like I can pretend. I'm not a good faker in that sense.
I'm the same way. Yeah. And it's gotten me into a lot of trouble in the corporation because there's a lot of people that will brown nose and just like, you know, suck up to these people. I'm like, well, this dude's a dick. So it's like, I'm just like, I'm going to do like 100. I'm me 100%. I'm not going to fall in line with this BS. It's wrong. What you're doing, what you're telling me is completely wrong.
Yeah. I remember the like aha moment for me when I was at EY. So like the nonsense of it was like the way that you climbed the ranks there was by networking with like higher up. So like in addition to the project that you're staffed on, you're supposed to be like legitimately brown nosing and just asking people how can I volunteer my time to help you? So you're supposed to be doing all of this like business development work. So anyway, I was pulled into this business development thing where I was helping put together a proposal for something that one of the senior managers was pitching. And he was like, we'll just like pitch them a model and then we'll put a model on it and we'll put a model on top of that and a model on top of that. And I'm sitting there listening and I'm like, what is happening? And somebody was like, can we do that? And he was like, oh, no, absolutely not. But we won't ever have to. Just write it down. And I was like, okay, oh like God. This is, I can't do this. I was like, that was so the wake up call for me. I mean, there was a lot of things, but that was the one where I was like, probably not it.
You caught it young too. So that's cool. Yeah. That's good. And then, so you started your own business, which is, I mean, you said you already have anxiety. I mean, holy shit.
I will say, so like when I said it earlier, I'm going to train people online. Like, how hard can that be? I had no idea what I was getting myself into. So like when I was just doing the fitness thing myself, when I wasn't certified, I had a couple of friends that had like started to ask me questions. And then I had a couple of college friends that were like, hey, like, will you write a training plan for me? And so I started like dipping my toe in the water. It wasn't a full-blown business, right? I was just like making some training plans in Excel and like doing some check-ins with people. And I was like, oh, this is pretty easy, like whatever. And so there was such a naivety when I started. And I'm so grateful for that because if I knew how much it entailed, if I knew how much anxiety it was going to invoke, if I knew how hard it was, my risk-averse brain would never have let me do it. Right. So like, I'm grateful for that. But it's relieved a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress in one domain, but it's also added a lot. I'm so grateful for it. I love what I do. I'm so, so, so fulfilled by it. But amazing. Is the idea of not knowing if your next paycheck is going to come or like if everything is going to crash and burn not scary? No, it's scary. But that's kind of okay. That's the bit, is it can be uncomfortable and it can be scary and still be the right thing that you should be doing.
Yeah, there's like that weird balance in life that you're trying to figure out. It's like at a certain stage, it's like, does money mean everything or is it being happy? You want to try and find that balance, like being happy and making enough money to live comfortably.
Yeah, no, I literally just, I'm sure you've heard, James Clear, everybody knows James Clear, but he's got this great newsletter and I literally was just reading it right before and I'm going to butcher the exact quote, but it was like, there are four different types of wealth. It was like financial wealth, like status related wealth, like time wealth. So like more like time freedom. And that there was one other one that was another one that's more linked to like freedom and happiness. And it was like, be very wary of the jobs that promise you one and two. So that like promise you the financial freedom and promise you the status and rob you of three and four of like your time and your happiness. And that was the thing that I didn't pay attention to. I was all for like financial freedom and status will lead to happiness. And it doesn't, is just the reality of that situation.
So you said you went to college for psychology as well?
Yeah, I did.
So during those courses, were you like kind of trying to figure out like how the financial burden is gonna, you know, like if you put all your efforts into making money,
yeah,
like did you think about that you're not gonna have any time for yourself?
No, never once. Literally never once. And this is like my biggest gripe with like the schooling system is they spend so much time teaching you about calculus and World War One, and nobody ever teaches you how to be a functioning adult in society. Correct. Like yeah. Nobody teaches you how much money you need to have to like actually live. Nobody teaches you like how to support your mental health when you're going through something. Like, so no, I had no idea. This was the thing everybody around me was doing. This was the thing I was supposed to be doing. And so that was the thing that I did. The thought literally never entered my head.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I know, it's wild. But we're so like, we're conditioned that way. We're conditioned that like financial freedom and status is like the pinnacle of success in our society. Like that is just how it's structured. And again, like I'm such a people pleaser, rule follower.
Yes.
So I was like, yeah, this is the obvious choice. Why would I do anything else? It didn't even occur to me that like there was an alternative option.
And we have to rewind the clock too. So when you're like, you know, 25 years old, you have to go into that mindset. And what you're preaching right now is, yeah, finance was like money, having money, that freedom was everything. Your status and the money that you have. I can go out every weekend. I can buy a nice car. I look like a baller in front of all my friends. Status. That's like the lifestyle in your 20s.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. That's crazy.
I know. So yeah, it was a ride for sure. I'm grateful for it now. Cause again, like if I hadn't taken that path, I don't think I ever would have ended up where I am now, but my God, was it a rough 5 years post-grad. It really, really sucked. Cause it was, I mean, like I switched jobs every 6 months to a year. So it was like learning something new every time and then putting all of this stock in like, this one's going to be better. This is going to be the one. And then every time it was like the next crippling defeat. And for somebody, again, that like has anxiety, that's such a people pleaser, and then inherently really is afraid of failure. It was like every time I couldn't make a job work, I felt like such a failure. And I was like, everybody else is doing this. Why can't I just do this? And I was so frustrated with myself.
If you have a relationship with your parents, what were your parents' input on this when you were changing jobs every 6 months? Did they notice something? Were they concerned?
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a great relationship with my parents. I'm super, super fortunate in that regard. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was hard not to notice because they're a huge support system for me. So they got a lot of tearful phone calls at like 8 a.m. when I'm like logging onto my computer.
That's good though. Communication, it's so good. People need to communicate with their parents or their loved ones. That's something that's missing, I feel like. And I love to hear that you said that you communicate and you're just open. Like you'll cry to your parents. Like that's what parents are there for.
Yeah,
like,
no, I'm so lucky for like the people that I have between my parents and my husband and my family. Fabulous therapist. I've got awesome. A lot of people that I can lean on. But with the first job, like when I was at EY, and I was 6 months in, and I actually found another job working for a meal prep delivery service, that was focused in fitness. So it was like a dream. I managed like 200 CrossFit gyms. It was the sickest job ever. But when I told my dad I wanted to leave and that I didn't think I could do this anymore, he told me not to. Because again, it's that very like old school mentality of like, well, what's going to happen if you have 6 months of a job on your resume? Like you have to stick it out for at least a year. And I did not take that advice, which was the best advice that I never took. And I took that other job, and that job, that company went out of business 6 months later, which is why I ended up doing. Yeah. Oh yeah, I know. It's why I ended up, there's more, trust me, there's more chaos to that story, but I'll leave it for now.
Write a book. But, I'll read it.
Yeah. But, after the second company went out of business, that wasn't my fault. So that wasn't like the red flag, but yeah, after the next company was 6 months, they were like, and then the next one, they were like, okay. So yeah, they definitely picked up on it. And ultimately, like they both have a really solid understanding of mental health. And they saw that I was miserable. And ultimately, as I think as any parent, they were like, we just don't want you to be miserable and we'll support you with whatever you want to do. And I'm super grateful that they were able to take a little bit of like financial pressure where they were just like, hey, like if you guys need help with anything, we're not gonna let you not pay your bills. And if you need a little bit of runway while you figure your shit out, that's okay. So I'm super, super fortunate to have been in that position and to have had that support. So it wasn't like the best advice from the get-go of stay in that miserable job for longer. But once they realized like truly how much it was impacting pretty much every facet of my life, I mean, it would have been impossible for them not to get on board with me making a much more drastic change.
Yeah, you're their baby. They want to see you do well. They don't want to see you go through hardships. Of course. Yeah, I have a 7-year-old, so it's like the perspective is like, I get it. I completely understand that. I wouldn't want anything bad to happen to him, you know?
Yeah. Do you see it with him? Like, I don't know obviously what his personality type is, but I know for me, like when I was 7, I already had that like overachieving, like there was nobody that could tell me that like getting a B wasn't going to ruin my life. Like, what do you do now when you like notice, if you do notice things like that, to like make sure that he is grounded and knows that there's more to life than just like what the grades are at this point and like leading to all of that stuff?
Yeah, right. I think it's important to try and let them figure it out as far as they can. You know, I think that builds some character in them. But when, if I see him struggling, I'll try to guide him. I don't want to give him the answers. I want him to use his brain, you know? And if he's going through hardships and stuff, like we have such a cool, open relationship. Like, he can just talk to me. I won't ever talk back to him. I just want him to feel comfortable with me. Cause I know it, and then like down the road in the future, when shit really gets heavy, when you get into high school, you know, like you want to trust your parents. And unfortunately, I don't think I had that with my dad. Like, I always felt like he was the law, you know? And I always felt like my mom was the law. Like, she would take someone else's side besides mine. So I had a hard time communicating with them. So it's kind of like you go through these things, you live your life, and it's like, all right, I don't want that for my kids. So what can I do differently? So what I lived, I'm going to try and put into his reality to where he can come to me for anything, you know, just an open line of communication, kind of like what you had with your parents. That's why I was really genuinely interested when you were like, I called my parents and I was crying and there was a lot of tearful conversations. That is such a beautiful thing to me. That's how it should be, because so many people are so quick just to like get rid of their parents and cut them off. It's your parents.
My parents are awesome. And I mean, the context of it is I was bullied a lot in middle school. So I didn't have a very active social life. I didn't have a lot of friends to lean on. So while all of that was going on, I spent a lot of time with my parents. And my dad owned a movie theater when I was growing up. That was like 2 hours from my house.
That's awesome.
It was so cool. But he worked most weekends. So I used to go up to the movie theater with him pretty much every weekend. And I would work up there, but we would have, you know, these 2-hour car rides each direction, and we'd put on movies late at night, just the two of us. So I spent a lot of time with my parents in my like very formative years, just because I really didn't have anybody else. And that laid such a foundation for that, coupled with the fact that like naturally I really am just an open book, but they fostered that so much. And I'm so, so grateful. And your son is lucky.
Thank you. Are you an only child?
I'm not. I have a younger sister.
Oh, wow. Okay. My kid's an only child. The way you're speaking made me think that you were an only child. I don't know why I thought that, but
I was going to say, what gave you that vibe?
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea why I thought that. Maybe because my own life, I have an only son.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I actually just came back. I live in California. I just came back from the East Coast. I was at my sister's wedding.
Oh, nice. All right. Yeah. How many years younger is she?
She is 3 years younger.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. I have a older brother. So it's like the reverse situation here. I'm the younger one and my brother is 3 years older than me.
Yeah. It's a tough age difference I found growing up, because it's like just far enough apart that your lives are pretty drastically different, but also close enough together that the younger sibling thinks that they're not that much younger. Like, I remember my sister being like, you're not that much older than me. And sure, now like she's 25, I'm 28. No big deal. Like, we're in the same stage of life. But when I was a senior in high school and she was a freshman in high school, it was a really big difference.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, I used to get picked on by my brother's friends. Oh, boy. They would pick me up at the high school and stick me in their trunk and drive away because they had cars and I was just a freshman pulling pranks, throwing water balloons at me. Yeah, it's pretty drastic in high school, the freshman senior thing. That's funny.
Yeah, but boys are brutal like that. I didn't throw any water balloons at her. It was more of a verbal thing.
Yeah, right. The mental warfare with you guys.
Yeah.
So listen, Carly, why the fitness route?
Yeah, I mean, the honest answer is that when I was going through all of the career just travesties, if you will. The one thing that was the constant in my life was fitness. So my senior year of college is when I really started like lifting in the gym seriously, which is big thanks to my then best friend turned boyfriend, now husband.
Oh, nice.
Who, yeah. So he was the one. I was like, I started my fitness journey, I think like a lot of women, like doing like HIIT workouts in the corner of the gym, hoping that nobody looked at me. And it wasn't until like I went with him and he's 6'3" that I was like, nobody's going to mess with me if I go with him and he knows what he's doing. So he was able to get me into it. And I definitely have a natural affinity for strength. I was a gymnast growing up, so that's just very much my build. So I picked it up pretty quickly and then fell into powerlifting. And like I said, went fully down that rabbit hole. And so as I was like going to work at EY every day, I was also waking up at 4:30 in the morning to go to the gym and hit my powerlifting workout and then getting ready in the New York Sports Club bathroom and hopping on the train and tracking all of my macros and just like doing all of the things. So it was
full freak mode.
Oh yeah, no. I went very, very overboard with it, which is again a huge reason why I'm the type of coach that I am now, because I took it way too far to an extreme and then rebounded, which is again a super common story. But yeah, fitness was the only thing that like I really loved to do. And when I was thinking about like, okay, what's the thing that I would wake up every day and actually be excited to work on? That was it. That's the thing I can talk about nonstop. That's the thing that I would do even if nobody paid me to do it. So I was like, that's it. That's the thing. It was a kind of natural progression just based on the fact that it was my one and only hobby because I poured everything into it.
Yeah. Here's the thing that worries me about that is like when you have a hobby and you love it so much that when you give it the title of your profession or work, you know, does that change the way you feel about it? Because now it's work. That's the only thing that worries me about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's totally, totally valid. Yes and no is the answer. So honestly, like for me now, I've been doing this for such a long time that like lifestyle wise, I'm not making such drastic changes to my lifestyle. I've got my like solid foundational habits. I know the things that make me feel really good. And they're so regimented now that it's kind of like I'm on autopilot. Sure, there are times when it's more challenging and I have to adjust things, but for the most part, like I've laid the foundation. Yeah. And so really where it comes in for me is like when I was working, I started working full time in a gym to get in-person experience. So yeah, when I was training 40 clients a week, my desire to go to the gym myself was really, really low.
Yes.
But it really has not taken away my love for it, because truly getting to work with people in the capacity that I do and seeing the massive changes that we get to make to their life and how much more energy they have and how much happier they are and just like all of these like downstream effects, if anything, it lights me up even more and has me like double down on it, because it reminds me like every single day what a huge impact it has on somebody else's life. Like for me, it's something I kind of take for granted now. I know what it feels like to feel really good because that's how I treat my body and therefore I feel really, really good. So it's easy to like lose sight of it. It's almost like when you have a stuffy nose and you like, you would give anything to be able to breathe out of your nose. But when you don't have a cold, you're like not thinking about the luxury of not having dry mouth every time you breathe.
So
like, it's the same thing. You could get used to it and take it for granted, but because I see it every day and I see how much of a difference it makes and how incredibly impactful it is, it makes me really grateful to have the lifestyle and to get to model that for other people. So yes, there are things about it that make it more challenging. Like I won't write my own training program, for example, because I just cannot write another program, but it does still give me like such an immense sense of like gratitude and really grounds me in the importance of my habits and the things that I do.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, what's the alternative? You've already lived the alternative like 15 times.
Yeah.
Like you've had how many jobs, you know what it's like on the other side.
Yeah, totally. So,
yeah. You're fulfilling other people and you're fulfilling yourself. You know, you're doing this duty, which is, I mean, I'm envious of you because I'm so big into working out too, but I was just so worried that my only escape right now is the gym and this podcast. And I'm so scared that if I were to take that plunge, that the fitness would just be sucked. Like the enjoyment would be sucked out of fitness for me.
Well, what part of it do you think would be sucked out? Because to say the enjoyment would be sucked out of it is vague, right? So like what's the part of it that you get the most enjoyment from? And then if you were doing it for a job, where do you think you would lose it in your own life?
I think what you were just saying about like having multiple clients a day and just going through, you know, I love sports. Sports is my thing. So I think I would be happiest if I was specializing in sports training.
Okay.
I think that would make me happy. I think I would lose enjoyment if I was just doing regular, you know, like workouts with people.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, people say that, like, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. And I completely call bullshit on that. I love what I do. It's my absolute passion. And it is still a ton of work. Yes, there are days when, like, I have a whole bunch of clients that I have to see. And it means that, like, yeah, like, do I want to hit my workout? No, not really. But that would, I feel like, be the case regardless of what I was doing. Like, a busy day, whether that's a busy day helping people with fitness or whether that's a busy day in regulatory compliance, it's still a busy day. It's the same sort of a mental load. But I think because I'm so keenly aware of what the alternatives are, I do have this, like, added sense of gratitude of, like, this gets to be my life. I chose this. This was an active decision. And, like, it could be a hell of a lot worse. So I have a pretty healthy dose of perspective with it, I think.
That's cool. Yeah. I'm glad I'm talking to you, just because I feel like we have a lot of similarities, because I've had quite a few jobs in the corporation world as well. And it's just like, nothing is panning out. I don't love it. You know, how could I? I didn't build it. It's like, it's just money.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not passionate about it.
That's the cool thing. I mean, anytime, regardless of what you do when you own a business, the work you put in is directly proportional to what you get out. Like, when you work for a company, like, whether you work 6 hours a day or 12 hours a day, your paycheck is the same, unless you know there's a whatever bonus structures, but like 9 out of 10, your paycheck's the same. Versus, like, when I really bust my ass and put a lot of time in here, like, you directly get to reap the benefits of it. And that's really, really cool. But then it's also, like, in the line of work that I do, I genuinely get to make a huge impact in people's lives. Like, I watch people really transform their lives. And that is, like, the most gratifying thing in the entire world. So it's really cool to do it. And also, like I said, scary and whatnot, but it is so much more gratifying than working for a soulless corporation.
Well said. I agree. Let's talk about the coaching. The coaching's got to be pretty difficult too, huh? Like, you have to be kind of like running, like, parrying the punches with everyone, you know, because everyone's so different. So you kind of, like, have to be doing this jujitsu with people when you're having these conversations and just kind of feeling out how people are. And would you say that you have a, like, because we were speaking and you said you didn't have a lot of friends and you were bullied in school. So why was that, I guess? Let's start there. Why was that, do you think? There's going to be a connection moving forward, because you're with people now, but back then it's like, okay.
Yeah, no, it's totally fair. So I like I said, I'm really intense. I'm really type A. And my mom will tell you that I've been 40 since I've been 5. So I just, like, I was just not a normal kid. And one way or another, I wound up with, like, the, you know, quote unquote, popular girls. And that was just not the right crowd for me. So when I turned, like, you know, 12, 13, and all of the girls were, like, really starting to get into boys and were, like, flipping through Victoria's Secret magazines and, like, ooh, look at that. I was so uncomfortable. And I couldn't keep my mouth shut about it because I'm so impulsive and because I'm just, like, kind of a pain in the ass. So yeah, I got myself in trouble, where you had said, like, some of that impulsivity got you in trouble. It got me in trouble. I just couldn't keep my mouth shut. I couldn't go with the flow. And really it was that, like, I just did not really get along with people my own age, because I've always felt much more mature than the actual age that I was. But I'm really tiny. I was on growth hormones, actually. So, like, I started high school at 4'4". So I was like this. Yeah, I was real small. So I was this really, really tiny package, but I am a really big personality, and I'm really impulsive, and I'm quite loud, and I'm very, very opinionated. And that just doesn't go well with girls, especially. And girls are super passive aggressive. And you go back to the corporation, it's all about the optics. And again, was not good at the optics there. So that's really what happened with it.
Okay. That makes sense. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nothing on you. I mean, it's just, that's who you are, and you're not trying to make a circle fit into a square, right? You know who you were.
Yeah. Do I wish I could have gone back and like tempered it a little bit? Yeah, it would have made my life a whole lot easier. But
Yes.
ultimately it is for sure who I am, and that is what it is, and I've had to just learn how to grow into that and lean into the positive sides of it and minimize the areas where it historically has come back to bite me.
You said you didn't like younger people, so your sister didn't have a chance, did she? You always felt like you were supposed to hang out with older people. Your younger sister didn't stand a chance, did she?
Well, it was that, but it was also that my younger sister had the best social life of all time. She had the closest friends. She always was going from one play date to the next, to the next, to the next. So I was so jealous of her. So I had this own, like, such a sadness of what was happening with me and, like, was dealing with my own mental health issues as a result. And then watching her just, like, thrive and be really, really carefree. She's so goofy and just, like, does not give a shit what people think. And I give so many shit. So I was just always like really, really jealous of that. So yeah, that was challenging for our relationship as kids, but we're super, super close now. It took some time.
Yeah, that's good. Well, people mature and you know, and the older you get too, I mean, it's like you start realizing what's important. I mean, maybe you're at that age now, right? You're just like all that stuff is just fluff. And
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, retrospect, you can look back and you're just like, all that social status shit in high school and middle school is just like, why?
Yeah, it's
Why?
nonsense. It's
Why?
literal nonsense. Yeah,
What
my
is
10-year high
everyone's
school
role?
reunion is this year, and I'm like, yeah, I don't think I'm gonna go to
Hell
that.
yeah. You say you're not gonna go, you should go. You should
Nah.
pull up in like a Harley Davidson or some
Like, look at me now, guys.
Mighty Mouse. How tall are you now? You're not still 4'4", are you?
No, God, no. I'm 5'2" now. Very, a
Okay.
very a respectable version of short.
All right.
Yeah, two and
Okay.
a half years of growth hormones will do that for you.
Dang, were you getting
Yeah.
strong?
No, not like that. So I like was legitimately growth hormone deficient. So it was just enough to like bring me
Oh.
up to the actual baseline levels. All it did was like help me get taller, and I have like weirdly large hands and feet for my size. That's literally all it did for me. Yeah. I wear like a size 9 shoe at 5'2", which is just
You really?
hilarious. Yeah.
Holy sh! I have a huge arch in my foot, so I wore a men's 9. So we probably have like the same size foot. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Put you on HGH. I thought I was going to be seeing you in the MLB.
I wish.
Okay, so the connection I was making
Yeah, I'm
because
curious.
because of how your social life was when you were a kid, you were kind of ostracized and
Yeah.
outcasted. But how do your clients see you now? They like you, I'd imagine, if they're your client, right?
Yeah, I like to think they like me. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it's like, did you have any hurdles you had to cross when you started out talking to strangers? Because I know that your first couple of clients were your friends, but when you
Yeah.
started to branch out and you had to meet complete strangers, what was that experience like?
Honestly, that's the easy part for me. So
Whoa.
I am, yeah, surprisingly, right?
Yeah.
I'm very extroverted. Talking to people has never been my thing. I can talk to a brick wall. That's chill. And also in jobs, I think it was, see, jobs 2, 3, and 4, or 2, 3, and 5 were sales jobs. So I was very used to doing
Oh,
cold
right.
outreach and
Yeah.
then doing all of the follow-up and like demos with strangers and then all of that sales cycle. So I was really, really used to that. Relationships are where I thrive 100%. Like that's in every job that I looked for post the first one. I was like, the part that I like is building long-term relationships with people. I think a lot of my history, and I mean, some of this for sure is just genetic and comes from my mom, but I have a really high degree of empathy. I
Me
really
too.
genuinely just like care a lot about people. I really, really do. And so
Empath.
I love learning about people. I love helping people. That relationship piece does come really naturally, and that lends itself really well to the type of coaching that I do, because I'm really transparent about this. The type of coaching I do is like pretty intimate. Like it's a vulnerable experience. Like I'm not just asking you like, how much weight you squatted this week. I'm asking you, like, what's the hardest thing that happened to you this week? We're going into like body image stuff. We're going into emotional eating. We're going into how your childhood is impacting the way that you're showing up as an adult in your health behavior. So we go so in depth. So building that relationship with my clients is so important because there's such an element of trust that they have in me and knowing that like they can share things with me and that it's a safe space and I'm not going to judge them and I'm going to be there to support them and that they can always vent to me is such a big foundational piece of how I've built the business and how I retain clients. So no, that was not the hard part. That's the part, incidentally, that I actually like the most. I love working with people.
Wow. Yeah, that's such a cool thing, is just to hear real people and their real stories and to watch them open up to you and just kind of knowing that they have your confidence.
Yeah, it's got to be amazing. So, so gratifying. And that is where like the psychology piece of it comes in. So like when I did my psychology degree in college, it was honestly my throwaway degree. Like I added it in because I was like maybe going to do this business program. And if you did that, you had to have a double major. So I was like, all right, I'll just like, I'll start this. And then I liked it and I kept doing it. But so much of the way that I coach is really rooted in human psychology and like why people think the way they do and why they behave the way that they do. And then leveraging those techniques to help you actually make long-term changes to your behavior and to your habits. So I lean so much on that and the way that I communicate with people and the types of questions that I ask and every facet of what I do. So it's a really cool like puzzle, honestly, of like talking to somebody new, hearing the unique parts of their life that are particularly challenging. Like you're talking to somebody and they're saying, hey, like I really want to do this thing and I can't do it and I can't figure out why. And I get to be the person that comes in and that listens and that learns about you and that helps you figure that out. And that is like the coolest thing in the entire world. But it's all about the relationship and listening to people. Because yes, I'm the health and fitness expert, but every single person is the expert of their own lives. And my job is to let that person be the expert and to glean as many insights as I can from them. And then to offer the support and suggestions from my toolbox to help them build their own toolbox. So it's a really cool job.
Yeah. God, yeah. That's like the complete opposite of a corporation. Could you imagine trying to have an intimate conversation at a corporation? Like the answers you'll get will be such bullshit. It'll revolve around like a bonus payout or a Mercedes or something.
Like, what's the ROI on that? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's crazy. Oh, geez. So needless to say, you made the right choice. You're happy where you're at.
Yeah, very happy with where I'm at. Again, it's stressful and it's scary and it's a lot of work, but it's for sure the best decision that I have made in my professional life. And honestly, it might be the best decision I've made in my adult life, period.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're still really young. Come on.
Yeah. I know. I do know that now.
I know that now. But you've been 40 since you were 6. So I don't even know.
Well, again, if I look back at the 22-year-old that thought it was too late to change careers, like then I didn't. But yes, I just turned 28 and I feel very confident that I'm very, very young and still know next to nothing. So. Yeah,
that's kind of funny to hear that you said that at such a young age, but that's like, for people out there, that should give them confidence to like, you're a freaking amazing coach. Like just to hear that, like how dead set you are on things, like that's a good mindset, you know?
Yeah. And being able to change your mind, honestly, is the best mindset that you can have. I mean, in psychology, we call that the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset, like the belief that you can actually do something. Like when I hear people say like, I can't do this, it's too hard, I'll never be able to change. It's like, well, why? Why do you feel that way, right? Like there's very few things that you can't actually change. And so like if there's anything that anybody takes away from this conversation, like let it be that your opinion can change and that everything that you believe and everything that you do is super malleable. Because unless you like genuinely have the belief that you can do something and that you can overcome obstacles and still do it, then yeah, you're never going to do it because you're going to get super discouraged. So yeah, honestly, being faced with a lot of these adversities and then being forced to change my opinion on those has been like such a building block for me as like a human being.
Yeah. Most people say you can't change your height, but you prove them wrong. I mean, So I mean,
thanks to my endocrinologist.
Hey, what are some I want to know about your nutrition, because like everywhere I go now, I don't know if this has something to do with the pandemic or when this started, but everywhere I go, whenever I go out, I am seeing an abundance in obesity, like a lot of obese, alarming, and yeah, a lot of people with ailments everywhere I go. And I don't know when I started noticing it, but it was pretty recent that I started keeping a tracker in my mind. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm really alarmed about it. And maybe it's because like a financial thing, because the healthy food is expensive. I don't know if you're going to call bullshit on me. I don't know. And cheaper food tends to be unhealthy. I don't know the
statistics. It's not so much about, so I mean, so again, there's some people out there that are like, you have to eat organic, you have to eat farm raised this. And yes, that is more expensive, but that's where, again, it's like that all or nothing. People are like, well, if I can't buy organic and I can't buy this and I can't buy all of the fancy stuff, then like, what's the point? And the reality is, you can buy frozen vegetables or canned vegetables. I buy a lot of my meat at Costco, which is a lot more affordable than anywhere else. It's not so much a matter of financial inaccessibility, not to say that it never is, but in my experience, it's less about financial accessibility and more about convenience. The like reality is, and it's unfortunate, our society is not set up for health. In our world, like, being unhealthy is much more normal than being healthy. So like, if somebody's like, well, I'm staying out late because I'm going partying with my friends, nobody bats an eye. But when I say I want to go home and be in bed by 9:30 so I can get up for the gym at 7, I'm a psychopath all of a sudden. So we just have normalized things not being healthy. So now everybody else thinks like, well, that's normal. That's what everybody else is doing. And that's honestly like a hurdle with clients. They'll be like, is this too much? Is this ridiculous that I'm having to do this? Why am I having to go so far out of my way to make these changes? And I have to remind them, like, the world is literally not set up this way, or at least the United States is not set up this way. Healthy things are not as convenient. Real quick.
Do you think unhealthy is profitable? When you were talking, that was like the first thing that came to my mind.
I never like to give a blanket yes or no. It always tends to be an it depends, but generally, yeah. I mean, if we think even just about the medical model in this country, we don't have a wellness model. We have an absence of sickness model. When you go to the doctor, they're not teaching you how to optimize their health. They're just trying to make sure that you don't have any illnesses. And again, with insurance in this country being such a big business, the insurance companies do better at, and like the medication companies and doctors and surgeons and whatever, they all do better when people need more shit. And so it's not in their best interest to make you healthy, because then you don't need all of the lotions and potions and pills that they are selling. You just need some vegetables and some more sleep and to move your body and get some water.
And leaves.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So no, it is definitely unhealthy is profitable. Again, the way that our society is set up, because there's a lot of big businesses that then are born out of solving those problems. And the more problems people have, the more money they get to make off of solving them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's where my mind was at.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that. A lot of issues stem from inflammatories, right?
In like issues in what way? Just like generally like health issues?
I would just say everything. Yeah. Inflammatory is never good, but I mean, I think that's like the number one thing I try to focus on is keeping my body in an anti-inflammatory state, you know, without medications. You know, like taking turmeric is a big one for me. Probiotics, you know, trying to not take antibiotics. I try my hardest not to. I don't like nuking my system. I don't know how you feel about that. It's just, I don't know. Maybe I'm going down too many rabbit holes when I go on Google and look up all this stuff, but I'm a freak when it comes to that stuff, because I'm very conscious about what I put into my body. It's because what I've been telling you, I see so many people with ailments, and I want my body to work as long as I can. It's a machine. Like, it sounds corny, but my body is my temple. When I was young, and I remember this, like, I remember this perfectly. I was on a run. I was probably like 17 years old. I had no money, but fitness was everything to me. and I saw this dude driving in his car, and he was a bigger guy and he wasn't in shape, but it was a nice ass car. And then during that run, I'm like, my body is my Ferrari. Like my body, you can't take your Ferrari into the grocery store. You can't take your Ferrari into the nightclub. You know what I mean? You can take 100%. Your physical body there. That's your Ferrari. So treat it like one. So
no, that's where my mindset is. Great analogy. And like, again, so many people are thinking really short term, like especially when, you know, somebody comes to me, there's usually like a short term weight loss goal, or there's a short term goal to gain a certain amount of muscle. And like, yes, that stuff is really cool in the short term. But the reality is, you have one, and I will take this from Bonnie Schroeder from Instagram, but she likes to call her body her meat suit. You've got one meat suit, just one of them. And that thing's got to carry you for a really long time. And yes, short term things are cool, but I'm training because I want to be able to do all the stuff I want to do when I'm 70 or 80. There's a Peter Attia's new book basically helps you work backwards, where he's like, okay, like what are the things that are important for you to be able to do at 85? And then he'll kind of calculate, well, this is how much muscle mass you need to have, and this is your bone density, and this needs to be your VO2 max. And then you can kind of work backwards and say, okay, well, if you want to do those things, then here's where you need to be at right now at 30 or 40 or 50 or wherever you are starting. So it really is the longevity of it that's the most important, because if you don't have your health, if your body is not cooperating, it takes away a lot of the enjoyment from life and a lot of the experiences that you get to have. And yeah, I'm so not interested in ever having to say no to something on the grounds that my body can't physically do it.
Yeah. Something else that I don't mean to be so negative, but it's just something that I see is like nowadays, so many people are just so fast to do cosmetics instead of actually do the hard work. Yeah. Put in the actual work, you know, people just look at a surgery or like,
yeah,
you know, Brazilian butt lift or whatever.
Well, and that's where you see, again, like even in like the fitness industry outside of like actual cosmetic procedures, but that's where you see the birth of like the 30-day challenge or 75 hard or all of these other like really intense challenges, because it promises quick results. And that's when you said like, is it the financial thing of why people don't eat healthy? And I was like, no, it's convenience. It's the same thing here. Like it's inconvenient for people to be faced with the idea that you have to make a fundamental shift to your lifestyle for forever versus just doing something for 30 days and then you're done and dusted and you can go back to doing what you were doing before. Right. So it's like, the whole industry promises, well, if you just do this for 30 days, then you'll have this. And like, sure, that might be true. And you might get there at the end of 30 days. But if you haven't learned anything about how to actually alter your lifestyle, again, going back to that, like teaching you about the process, if you don't love the process that you took to get the end result, if you can't sustain the process that you took to get the end result, you are never going to be able to keep the end result. And so, yes, doing like a 30-day challenge or doing like, you know, any of the other crazy fad things that might feel convenient. Ozempic. Yeah, I wasn't going to say it. I mean, Ozempic is obviously a loaded thing, because the reality is there is a huge obesity epidemic in this country, and obesity is a huge a huge comorbidity for so many other things. And so like, yes, I think Ozempic is really important for a lot of people to be able to take off that extra weight so that they can be healthier. I just am also a firm believer that that's something that should be paired with also learning how to make the lifestyle changes, because you're not on Ozempic for forever. And the same thing, like you finish Ozempic or you finish 75 hard, if you don't know how to actually do the things that got you that result to actually like maintain it, then you just end up right back where you were at square one. So big fan of just like sustainable incremental changes. While it may feel less convenient and less like sexy up front, that's ultimately the thing that like will actually allow you to change your life and make those lasting changes.
Yeah, you know what's better than Ozempic is a goddamn coach like yourself, you know, giving you on these schedules and a regimen, like, you know, like not just putting a band-aid over everything.
Yeah, no, it is really getting to the root cause. And again, that's why I do such a holistic type of coaching, because anybody can give you a training plan and set your macros. I mean, at this point, ChatGPT can give that for you. It's like we all
I'm about to delete that. Oh, no.
But I mean, that is the reality. Like, you can get the advice. The advice is readily available on the internet now. You can find so many stock training programs. There's a million different macro calculators. Like, we all know what we should be doing. It's the disconnect between what you should be doing and then actually doing the thing. So my job as a coach is to help you understand why you're not doing it and help you bridge that gap. So again, if I like, I'm a big psychology nerd, but like any decision or behavior that we make as human beings, we either do to solve a problem or to eliminate some form of discomfort. And like, it can also be argued that eliminating discomfort is in itself a form of solving a problem. So like, if you really pin it down to that, everything you do is trying to solve a problem. So if you're not going to the gym, even though you know you should, well, think about what problem is that solving for you? Like, what problem is not going to the gym solving? And if you can start to get to the root of that, and then start to get to the root of like what you actually want to do, the thing you should be doing, why should you be doing it? Connect with that. That's the first step in then being able to like actually do the things. But yeah, I mean, I'm fine saying that like anybody else could write a training program. I mean, it's not gonna be the exact training program that I write, but like there's a lot of ways to get a training program. You don't need me for a training program. You need me to keep you accountable to that and to teach you how to keep yourself accountable to it once I'm no longer around as your coach.
I mean, every time I go on YouTube, I see like about 45 different ads of like fitness people shooting out like fitness programs at me and what diet I should be on,
yeah,
and personalized meals. Like it's become crazy at this point.
Yeah. Well, it's a huge business.
Huge. Yeah. Yeah.
And the more flashy things sound and the more people promise you results fast, the sexier it is, the more people are drawn to it, the more money you make. And then again, then you don't sustain the results, and then they have to do the next one and the next one and the next one. And then it's more money and more money and more money. So it is just really like this cycle, which again goes back, like we do not set people up to succeed because it doesn't really suit capitalism a lot of the time, again, the worst.
Yeah. Jeez. What are your thoughts on microplastics? Have you looked into that?
I haven't looked into it a ton, to be totally honest. For sure, not like my area of expertise. The only thing I do is try not to drink out of a plastic water bottle or like leave my plastic water bottles in a hot car or anything like that.
Oh yeah, but just nuke it. That'll kill you.
Yeah. So
I've
done
that so many times.
Yeah. So no, I don't, it's not a huge thing that I am thinking about, mostly because again, like most people, if you think about like the hierarchy of health, people are thinking about like, oh my God, if I eliminate the microplastics, or if I start taking supplements, or if I start doing cold plunges and saunas, like that's going to be the answer. That's going to be the missing piece that gives me the results. The reality is most people are not nailing the basics. I focus so much more on nailing the absolute basics of things, because unless you're nailing the basics, all of that other stuff is just like the tippy top of the pyramid. So like, yeah, are those things important? Sometimes they are. Like, are microplastics a thing? Yeah. But are microplastics going to be the thing that like make or break your health journey? No.
Right. Yeah. So holistically, you're taking the approach. Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you allowed to tell me like a common ailment or common, like, I don't know, a client comes, do you see a lot of the same things that where people don't deal with? Yeah. Patterns.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you allowed to tell me like it is?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously I won't use names, but yeah, I can share all of that. So I mean, the most common reason why people come to me is because they want to lose weight. And typically it is people that have tried to lose weight in the past and have maybe had some success and just have not been able to sustain the results or see the like totality of the results that they want. And generally speaking, the reason for it comes back to like perfectionism and like this all or nothing mindset. So there's this belief that like you need to be perfect. So when people commit to a fitness journey, it's like, I'm going to go to the gym 5 days a week and I'm going to track all of my meals. And I'm only going to eat fruits and vegetables. I'm never going to have another cookie, and I'm going to walk it. I'm going to do this and all those different things.
Set yourself up for failure there.
Yeah. Cause then it's like the second you don't do one of them, it's like, well, I didn't do it. I'm a failure. I'm no longer perfect. Wow. Screw it. I'm not going to do any of it. And I'll just start over next week. And that is like such a cycle. So the number one thing I work with people on is addressing that all or nothing mindset and really teaching about like consistency and that like element of progress and starting to notice when you're falling into that so that it isn't this always like I'm starting, I'm going all in, and then I'm stopping because I wasn't perfect. That's the number one thing.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty valuable. Oh my God. You're spot on.
Yeah. It's very common. I cannot tell you how many times. I mean, I have that conversation with new clients and I have that conversation with seasoned clients too. It's the thing with making changes to your behavior and like making changes to your mindset is like you've spent, for some of us, decades and decades reinforcing the like behaviors and the beliefs that you have. And so then we start to unpack it and get to the bottom of it and start to make these adjustments. But you took decades to form those beliefs. You're not going to unform those beliefs in a matter of weeks. Like you're going to have slip ups. There's going to be, even when you're aware of the all or nothing mindset, you're going to have moments where you have an extra cookie and you're like, fuck it, I'm going to eat the entire box. It's going to pop into your head. It's about really just like putting in the reps of noticing it. And then again, like that's how you make the change long-term. You got to really undo, and you can't technically undo old behavior patterns, but you can basically wire new patterns on top of them so the old ones aren't quite as prevalent. But it honestly all comes back to mindset. It's, again, people know what they should be doing. It's how do you actually consistently do the things that you should be doing? And for most of us, we're the ones standing in our own way. Yes, there are legitimate time constraints. There are legitimate financial constraints, but there's always solutions. There's always something you can be doing. Like you can go for a 15-minute walk. You can wake up and have a glass of water. You can eat a vegetable at every meal. Like these are things that are not huge barriers to entry. The reason why we're not doing it is because we're in our own head. So it really all comes back to each individual person's mindset and how we get them to a place where like they actually believe that they can do it and that they believe they can do it even if they slip up.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot to unpack because you're not going to you're not going to get that all in the first day. So this is quite literally a process. What's the average length before someone, like, I know it's very hard because everyone is different, but is there like an average length before someone sees results? Because I'm sure that's a lot of questions that people ask is like, when am I going to see results? I hear that all the time in my family, you know, it's like, well, it's going to take time.
It very much depends on what the results are. And like results are different for every single person. So like if somebody's result is that they want to see a certain amount of fat loss, or somebody else's might be that they want to be able to do their first unassisted pull-up. And for somebody else, it might mean that they can go out to dinner and not have anxiety about the fact that they don't know what's in their food. So it's impossible to say like this is the timeline at which you'll see results, because it depends on the results. It depends on the person. It depends on their degree of consistency. It depends on so many different factors.
Setting reasonable expectations is.
Yeah, exactly. But in general, like you will, so changes to your body, depending on what they are, tend to happen slowly. Like building muscle is a painfully slow process. Like it's annoyingly slow. And losing body fat is faster than gaining muscle, but it's still not an overnight process when done sustainably. So I will, like, for example, aesthetically, I take progress photos with clients every 4 to 6 weeks. And that's a pretty decent time horizon where we can start seeing changes. It's not going to be night and day changes and that sort of a thing, but where you start seeing really big bodily changes is closer to that like 6 month mark. Again, depending on which direction you're going, depending on how like intense like of the change is that you're making. But 6 months is when you really start to notice the big changes in your body. But in terms of changes to your mindset, I mean, that can come a lot faster. The first step is always just being aware of it. Once you learn to like click in and be aware of the mindsets that you have, it starts to become really hard to ignore them. And even if you don't quite yet know how to change them or how to implement what you're acknowledging, just that awareness alone is enough to elicit a whole lot of change in a relatively short amount of time.
Right. Right. Jeez. Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot for sure. It's not a, I'm definitely not your traditional strength coach, because it's a lot more than that. I consider myself to be like a lifestyle coach. I often call myself a holistic health coach. because I'm really learn a lot about every single person that I work with, which again goes back to me really building that relationship with them and getting to know them as a human being. Because if I don't know all of these different elements of your life, I don't know which strategies are going to work for you specifically. And I also don't know what your specific like mindset hurdles are. So yeah, it's cool, but it's definitely, it is a lot for sure. Like I carry a lot of, you know, other people's stressors and anxieties and mindsets and emotions. And I'm super grateful for it, but it's definitely, you know, I work with a lot of people and a lot of people have a lot of problems. Everybody
yeah,
does.
Yeah, you're taking a different approach. It's really cool to hear this. You brought up something that raised a question in my mind is like, how are you feeling with all this? Because yeah, that is quite a bit to take in if you're talking to multiple different people and they're all sharing their, you know, depression and like mental strains that they're going through and having spousal problems at the house, or like they feel like they don't look good and this is never going to work. That's a lot of yeah. pressure on you.
Yeah, it's definitely challenging at times. I will say most of the time it's really okay. And again, a lot of that comes back to just like the genuine gratitude I have to get to do this job. And also I have experience working with my own coaches historically, and I know what it felt like to just all they cared about was whether or not I was progressively overloading my lifts and whether or not I was hitting my macros. I know what that feels like, and I know how ineffective that was for me. So I am genuinely grateful to get to be that support system for a lot of people, especially for those that don't have as much of a support system outside of that necessarily. I will say the times when it's hardest are when I'm having a bad day or when I'm having my own stuff, because it happens. It happens that like I'm having a really anxious or just like stressed out sort of a day, or that I have my own relationship issues or family issues or stressors or whatever. So on days when I don't feel like my best self, that's when it's hard for me to really show up as my best self and be that cheerleader for other people. Luckily, it's those days are, you know, much fewer and far between. But those are where it becomes more challenging.
Let's say you're having one of those days. What steps do you take to alleviate that, mitigate it?
It's a mindset thing for sure for me. So it really comes down to like grounding myself. So I use a lot of tools from acceptance commitment therapy. So basically acknowledging that the feeling that I'm feeling is there. I'm not going to try to get rid of it. I'm not going to try to pretend that it's there. I'm going to acknowledge I'm feeling the thing and also realize that my feeling isn't a fact and I don't have to act based on my feeling. So I can feel stressed and overwhelmed. I can feel sad. I can feel grumpy. I can feel whatever. And yeah. I can still show up and do those things. And like, is that hard sometimes? Yeah, it is. But the more you do it and the more I prove to myself that like, hey, I can be whatever negative emotion and still show up and do it, the more it reinforces to you that like, you know what, actually you can. So usually it's a little bit of a gratitude practice for me. And it's a little bit of like grounding myself and being like, look, this is where you are right now. This is what you are focusing on. And you're feeling this thing, but you can feel it. That's okay. And you can still do this. And at this point now, I've just kind of been doing it long enough that I know that I can. I have yet to collect any evidence that I'm not able to. So as much as my brain may be telling me that I can't, right, I don't have any evidence to support it. So it's, I have to remind myself of that a lot.
Yeah. So yeah, you lady are in tune with your body. That's cool.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, completely. So you've been doing it long enough that you have a pretty good grasp on your body. A lot of people, I don't think they are in tune with their body. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate, but it's never too late. You can always change that. I mean,
100%. You can change it at any moment, and you can change it with any scale of change. Changing doesn't mean you have to overhaul your whole lifestyle all at once. In fact, I'd highly recommend that you don't do that, but think about what's the smallest change you can make that you can actually commit to right now and get really, really good at that thing. And then once it becomes automatic, then build on top of it. So
yeah, don't wait till Monday. God damn it. Do it tomorrow or now.
Just do it. Yeah, absolutely. Like, just get started with it. If that's a one glass of water, if that's one more gram of protein, if that's a 10-minute walk, if that's one workout a week, like whatever it is, like you may not be able to do everything that you think other people are saying makes up a fit person, but I guarantee you there is one action, at least one, probably dozens, that you can take, that you reasonably can actually do, that will start to push you in the right direction.
Yeah, people listen to this podcast. After you listen to this, get the hell outside and go for a walk, damn it. Especially if you work remotely and you've been in your house for 15 hours straight, and now you're about to go to sleep for another 10 hours. Just go outside for 20 minutes. Feels good. Go for a nature walk, damn it. That
highly recommend.
I'll tell you what. I fish a lot, and when I go out and I'm in the woods and I just fish for like 4 hours and I come back, whew, I feel good. I feel ready.
That's me too. I have a dog, so incidentally, like, I walk a lot because he demands that I walk a lot. But it's really good because otherwise, I probably wouldn't get up from my desk very much. But this forces me to go out on, you know, 3, 4, 5 walks a day. And it is so grounding for me to like be outside and to be in nature and to just get that time away. So again, even if that's 5 minutes, I had one client, she had a lot of like friction when it came to getting outside for a walk. And we practiced with literally just walking outside to the mailbox and back, that was the minimum. That if she went for a longer walk, great. But at a bare minimum, she had to just walk out to the mailbox and walk back, because then you're keeping the placeholder for the habit. You're proving to yourself that you can do it even when you don't want to, because again, the bar is so much lower. And now she takes 30, 40 minute walks every single day, and it's something that she really loves to do.
Amazing. Yeah. And it started by going outside to the mailbox.
To the mailbox. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Carly, thank you so much for being here. Let's wrap this up. You've been a joy to talk to. You have so much knowledge on you. You blew me away. Like I was left speechless sometimes. Like, you are a book. You should write
a
book.
I appreciate it. In all of my free time, I will consider it.
I mean, it's not a bad idea. You like, there's a lot of knowledge in your mind, and I know that you sometimes you take the not the long route, but you'll condense things to speak it. So I'm sure if you did like long form, you can get a book out there.
Well, I try to give away a lot of the knowledge in the form of, I do a lot of Instagram content with a lot of the like free tips and tricks. I write a blog every week. I have a newsletter. So I do a lot of writing and trying to get it out there. So it's not quite in book form yet, but there is a lot of my knowledge bombs out there on the interwebs.
That's cool. So how can people find you?
Yeah, for sure. So if you are interested in any of the aforementioned free information, you can follow me on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube at Moxie Barbell. And then you can also check out my website, which is moxiebarbell.com. And there you can check out my blog. You can join my email list. You can do that from Instagram too. You can learn more about coaching. You can schedule a call with me if you're curious to learn more. So yeah, at Moxie Barbell or moxiebarbell.com.
Amazing. Appreciate you, Carly. Thank you so much for doing this. Everyone at home, thanks for listening. Go outside, walk to your mailbox or something. Go grab a fishing pole. Go buy a dog. Go for a walk. All right. Go check out Carly. Appreciate you guys. Thanks again, Carly.